Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Let's get a few more undecideds on, and then we're going to hear from John McWhorter, the linguist, who's got some very interesting observations about the Democratic convention and how it followed the Republican convention from a language standpoint. But if you came in undecided 2 weeks ago, where are you now? Oscar in Queens, you're on the air. Hi, Oscar. Right to the point.
Hi, Brian. I voted for Obama back in 2008, watched the two conventions. Came out disaffected, haven't heard anyone talking about what the alternatives to blue and red are, and I'm voting independent, even if it means that Romney wins and the Republicans take the White House.
Not enough being done by Obama, so you're voting green. Joseph in Nassau, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joseph.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
Good.
Appreciate taking the call. You know, I'm definitely the guy that Paul Ryan was talking about. I'm 28. I finished law school. I'm an attorney. $120,000 in loans and little or no job prospects, you know, waking up in my childhood bedroom. I think the Republicans did an awesome job of showing, you know, getting me mad as hell and, you know, just reaffirming the system is broken but had no solutions. Was really desperately trying to be inspired last night and felt like the commentators were right. It was kind of a boring State of the Union speech, you know, and I'm waiting for either candidate. What about, you know, people like me, 28 years old? Obama was speaking about all the opportunities, you know, people getting education, getting student loans. I already got the education. I have the student loans. I have the debt. You know, what about us now? You know, 28-year-olds living in our parents, you know, childhood bedrooms. You know, I'm not expecting either party to get me a job or my generation jobs, but what about the people that have the education? We have the student loan debt and, you know, there's no job prospects in sight.
Joseph, keep checking in with us this fall. I want to know how this winds up for you, okay?
All right, great. I appreciate it, Brian.
Thank you very much. Biba in Jersey City. You're on WNYC. Hi, Biba. Right to the point.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for accepting my call. Brian, I'm part of the independent electorate, which makes up 40%, I think. And when I watched Mitt Romney a few weeks ago, and, you know, he keeps stressing, I believe in America, I believe in America. And then that's in theory. In practice, he's investing his personal wealth in the Cayman Islands. So what is the equation?
So,
I mean,
were you
undecided? This country,
were you undecided 2 weeks ago?
Yes, I was, because, you know, I was quite fed up with, you know, I needed some tax reforms and something from this administration. And I thought maybe Mitt Romney will give us something to think about. But his theory and practice is very conflicting.
Biba, thank you very much. All right. Listeners, keep posting if you are undecided. And, of course, everybody may post to our webpage. If you are undecided, though, going into both conventions, where are you now? How much have you been swayed or not? And as you've been hearing from our callers, some have been swayed and some have not. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show to keep the conversation going on the comments page. Linguist John McWhorter joins me now, as he did last week after the Republican convention, this time to talk about how the Democrats did with speechifying. He's a contributing editor at New Republic and the author of What Language Is and What It Isn't and What It Could Be. Hiya, John.
Hi, Brian.
So no empty chairs of Clint Eastwooding this week. From all accounts, the Democrat celebrity speakers, Eva Longoria, Scarlett Johansson, Kerry Washington, did not have senior moments on stage, probably because they're sort of the opposite of seniors. And the Democrat surprise guest was Gabby Giffords. Listen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
So everybody was crying, but why, as a linguist, did this grab you?
Well, of course, one thinks about the fact that somebody who suffered an injury such as she has is at the point where she can recite the Pledge of Allegiance and handle language, that's not something that everybody could do, and the effort that it must have taken is stirring and inspiring. And of course, you can't also help thinking that the surprise guest at the Republican convention could barely rub a noun and a verb together, whereas here's somebody who is operating with a distinct handicap and using formal language such as that. But it was a very deft moment in many ways.
And it was an example of how context adds meaning to even the simplest speech that's become rote for so many people. We talked last week, you and I, about whether Romney was using coded language, racially coded language, when he said this.
When the world needs someone to do the really big stuff, you need an American.
And you told my producer that you think the president was pushing back against this when he said things like these.
I've signed trade agreements that are helping our companies sell more goods to millions of new customers. Goods that are stamped with three proud words, made in America.
And this?
You know what? That's not who we are. That's not what this country's about. As Americans, we believe we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, rights that no man or government can take away.
So, John McWhorter, do you think that settles that?
Oh, it very much settles that. This whole idea that Obama is un-American or not interested in the American way is absurd, and always has been, and I'm sure that in composing that speech, he wanted to put paid that whole idea. And it's at the point where, say, Dinesh D'Souza, in this documentary that has Obama painted as some sort of anti-colonialist, as somebody who's got some foreign way of trying to do things, all of that is completely out the window at this point. Anybody who looked at the evidence could see that it's pure rhetoric, and I think Obama means it, too. But it was time that he pushed back at that, and he needed to do it more than once. That was definitely a speech made by somebody who was very much in love with the U.S. of A. under any kind of Eisenhower or red meat conception. I was glad to see him finally do that.
I was actually wondering, though, if it was too subtle. I got it when he stood up there and said, made in America, that there was a subtext that it was about him. But for all these people who are susceptible to the insinuations that he's either foreign or anti-American, does it land?
You know, I think so, just in the sheer number of times, and I must admit it's been too recently for me to check, the sheer number of times that he said America. I think that even somebody who went into it trying to see him as some sort of alien would have seen the cognitive dissonance in seeing things that way when this is somebody who almost couldn't stop talking about what makes the United States great, not to mention that Osama bin Laden is dead, etc. I think this speech was 101 in showing that whatever problems you might have with Obama, the idea that he's somehow Mr. Spock just doesn't work.
And the president also ended his speech with a definitive statement of American exceptionalism. Listen.
America, I never said this journey would be easy, and I won't promise that now. Yes, our path is harder, but it leads to a better place. Yes, our road is longer, but we travel it together. We don't turn back. We leave no one behind. We pull each other up. We draw strength from our victories, and we learn from our mistakes. But we keep our eyes fixed on that distant horizon, knowing that Providence is with us and that we are surely blessed to be citizens of the greatest nation on earth. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless these United States.
And that, of course, was the very end of the speech. And I gather you heard a little echo of Martin Luther King there?
Oh, yeah, it's clear that's what he's doing. Notice also citizens of the United States. That's not an un-American thing to say. That was a passage where you can hear that the audience is quite thrilled. And, you know, maybe I'm getting a little world-weary, but in 2007 or 2008, that would have made the hairs stand up on the back of my neck. But at this point, it's beginning to sound a bit like a routine. Obama's very good at that, I think, what he was trying to do. And it was very structured in using words like travel and road and path and pull and then the word providence. All of it means that there's movement, both in the physical and in the metaphorical sense. And we're talking about a mountaintop. He's talking about upward. Obviously, all of this is about marketing. Martin Luther King and trying to show that we're involved in a struggle, a particularly potent struggle, and he's in the middle of it, and even a noble victim, and that it's our job to help him. That's what I would have put together if I were in his position. But the fact is, it's a tick. It's a trope. It's something that he can pull out when he wants to. And there was a time when the idea of a president using the cadences of Martin Luther King on stage in State of the Union addresses was a novelty. I was certainly one of the people who thought it was absolutely thrilling. But at this point, we've heard it before, and it's getting harder to mistake that melody for lyrics. And as wonderful as that ending was, that's the way you have to end a speech, especially if you're him, I could have stood for more content.
He even did use that southern accent a little bit, like here.
We can meet that goal together. You can choose that future for America.
But meanwhile, the actual southerner, Bill Clinton, sounded professorial, a word we usually associate with Obama, asking the audience to think. Listen to this.
Think about this. President Obama's plan cuts the debt, honors our values, brightens the future of our children, our families, and our nations. It's a heck of a lot better. It passes the arithmetic test, and far more important, it passes the values test.
John McWhorter, the master, Bill Clinton.
Oh, absolutely. That was one of the best speeches I've ever heard, certainly the best American speech since Obama's address on race, which was so many years ago now. He managed to actually give a professorial address without seeming stuffy, without seeming long-winded. He resisted the audience's understandable desire to keep standing up after every sentence. And he made a case. He made a case in a way that Obama, for some reason, has not done himself. And the southern cadence helps. It's very hard to sound condescending when you have a warm cornpone accent, let's face it. And he used it to his advantage. I hated to feel this way, but I felt that that stole the whole convention. Obama's speech was nice, but it was kind of a letdown. It was an anticlimax. Isn't it interesting that in a way we were all more interested in what Romney had to say, whether we agreed with it or not, than what Obama did? I'm surprised to feel that way about him, but it's gotten to that point.
Although it's not surprising in the sense that in 2008, 2004, Obama, as you were saying a minute ago, was a novelty. And Romney, though he's been campaigning for a long time, he has not been president. And so hearing him give a convention acceptance speech, there was more suspense to that, more mystery.
Of course. But there's always been a part of me that has assumed that Obama was such a god in many ways, and I have certainly been open to thinking of him as a philosopher king rather than a person sometimes. But I always imagine that he can keep outdoing himself, but then none of us can do that. And so my expectations are probably too high, as many of ours are.
Now we know him warts and all after actually having governed for 4 years. Now, when you were on a couple of weeks ago, you were talking about how Obama goes in and out of that southern speak and how it's not feigned, in your opinion. It's something that African Americans in many parts of the country grow up doing naturally. And I think it was the very next day that Joe Biden story broke where he got into trouble for using a little bit of southern speak. And here it is.
Romney wants to let he said in the first 100 days, he's going to let the big banks once again write their own rules. Unchain Wall Street. They're going to put y'all back in chains.
So he really kind of did it for only one word, just the way he said y'all. And yet it started this firestorm. I wonder your take on that as a linguist.
Well, many people thought that it seemed fake because, of course, Joe Biden is not a southerner. He's certainly not a southern black person, doesn't have a history of his ancestors being in chains. And so many people thought of it as condescending. I think that Biden was just trying for a kind of identification. He's a very warm speaker. And sometimes there's this idea that we're not supposed to bring up the plantation in front of black audiences. Hillary Clinton got in trouble for making a comment like that without saying the y'all when she was running for president. But I don't know, because if you roll the tape back and no one says anything about plantations, and there's a certain kind of person who says that we're denying black people's nasty history and covering up what the nature of the past was. So I'm not insulted that he would mention the plantation when so many people in the audience are black. Using that kind of dialect Yeah, it was forced, but with good intentions.
Suggesting, though, to the Republicans, which is why they were so offended or acted so offended, that Biden was saying they actually are for slavery.
Yeah, and I think there's a tendency these days to pretend that we don't understand what a metaphor is. And I always think of Barbara Jordan, who, you know, was a wonderful speaker, black woman, and I remember her at the Democratic Convention in 1992.
And we have 10 seconds.
Speaking, if she had used a military metaphor, everybody would have stood up and cheered, and nobody would have said that she was being violent. Yet nowadays, I think we intentionally misconstrue these sorts of things because we have a news cycle to fill.
Linguist John McWhorter's latest book, What Language Is and What It Isn't and What It Could Be, newly out in paperback. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.